Looking for a dating experience where high standards are the norm? Welcome to Luxy, the exclusive dating platform where quality is key. With an acceptance rate of only 10 to 15%, Luxy is designed for individuals who seek meaningful connections with people who match their ambitions and lifestyle. Plus, Luxy's unique income verification feature adds an extra layer of assurance, creating a trusted environment to meet like-minded singles. Join today to experience a premium approach to dating. Check the link in the description. Namaste and welcome back to another episode of The Sapient. Today, we have someone who is a very literate person, right? Who is very well-versed with education and has done a lot in his life and also an author. So welcome, Nicholas. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Ganesh. Thank you for having me on your program. Very excited to be here.
So how's your day going? You know, how's everything?
So far, so good. It has been a good day. You know, things got weird again in America after the election. So we're back where we started from with weird again. And we're all kind of dealing with that, particularly out here in California and in the Bay Area.
Got it. How weird is it, right? Especially for your country. Now that the election is done, right? And there is so much time until the new president comes in.
Yeah, that's generally not weird when the person who loses accepts having lost. And up until 2020, that was an expected thing in our society. It's just sort of, you know, kind of, there's a lot in American government that depends upon the old gentleman's agreement, right? And so when you finally get somebody who breaks the gentleman's agreement, as we did in 2020, then it calls into question a lot of things that were not codified in law, but perhaps should have been codified in law and should not have just been occurring on a handshake. You know, when you have to count on people being civil, and also when you have to count on people sharing the same facts. That's been a problem for a little while in America, is that we don't, we're a divided country because we don't all absorb the same facts. We don't agree on those facts. In fact, I remember a number of years ago, there was a one of Trump's campaign manager in the 2016 campaign coined this phrase, alternative facts. Well, there is no such thing, frankly, as alternative facts. There is a fact, and then there is a lie. So alternative facts are, in fact, lies. And calling them alternative facts is just another word for something that we all know to be a lie. So that's really the weirdness, is living in a country where someone will tell you something that is sort of manufactured within their own news bubble, which is patently untrue and easily disproved, and yet they believe in it. Because it turns out what people are doing in this country is they're manipulating sort of the human capacity to hold on to a lie. Most people will hold on to lies because if you've made the lie so integral to your sense of being, then even when confronted with the fact that it's a lie, you'll still insist that it's the truth. Like people now who still claim that Donald Trump won the 2020 election. He did not win the 2020 election, and lost lots of lawsuits trying to prove that he did win the 2020 election. But and even you'd think after having won in now in 2024, they'd give up that lie. But they haven't given up that lie. It still exists as sort of a manifest reality, even though it is not true. So that's the weirdness right now that we deal with. And I'm not sure how you can have a healthy, functioning representative democracy in a country where there are where we can't agree on facts.
Nicholas, do you think this whole issue exists because U.S. doesn't have like immediate threat outside their borders? Like you guys are like very safe, right?
Yeah.
For example, other countries are landlocked and they have to fight, right, sometimes. And you know, there is tension in international circles. But for US, it's like, it's rather convenient, right? Because you guys just don't have anybody else. Do you think that's a factor?
I mean, it's not something that I've ever thought of before, but now that you bring it up, there's a definite possibility. I think that there's, along with what you're mentioning, mm-hmm. comes an American, sort of an almost innate American mm-hmm. sense of global supremacy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Listen, for any of us in this country who have traveled to other parts of the world, we mm-hmm. know that there are many other parts of the world that are cleaner, safer, and better to their citizens, have mm-hmm. better health care, and are able to elect women without tripping about electing a woman, for example. Mm-hmm. We still have not accomplished that. There are also parts of the globe that have slipped into fascism. Mm-hmm. We got lucky during World War II. But we got lucky, you know, while the rest of the world, particularly Europe, mm-hmm. got people like Mussolini, Stalin, and Hitler. Mm-hmm. We got FDR, by the way, was not perfect because he mm-hmm. also removed Japanese Americans, loyal citizens, from their homes mm-hmm. and interred them in prison camps. Mm-hmm. He was not perfect. He was also a bigot. Mm-hmm. So it's not perfect over here. But we didn't get Hitler, Mussolini, or Stalin mm-hmm. To sort of exploit a global economic depression. Mm-hmm. We have Trump, though, now. And, you know, I'm sitting here at home watching some of the riots that are going on mm-hmm. Around the Jewish soccer team mm-hmm. abroad. And I'm seeing in foreign countries a Trump mm-hmm. flag, you know, amongst rioters.
Yeah.
Anti-Semitic rioters, and realizing that, you know, look, this phenomena is we're in with every other right-wing nut job running a mm-hmm. country or aspiring to run a country somewhere mm-hmm. else in the world, as long as Trump is in office out here.
Well, do you think, Nicholas, honestly, that Trump does have a kind of international appeal?
I'm not sure. I know that when I traveled abroad, and keep in mind, I was only in France. So when I was in France briefly during the first Trump administration, I kept running into people who were asking me, what happened to your country? Mm-hmm. Now, France has flirted with far-right extremists and sort of a xenophobic crowd as well with mm-hmm. with the whole Le Pen party. So far be it for them to cast aspersions on us. Mm-hmm. But they haven't elected them yet, okay? Mm-hmm. They are seeing a little bit of a rise right now, but they haven't elected them yet, as we have now elected ours twice. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that he's not the global phenomena. It just struck me today to see a Trump mm-hmm. flag in Europe in the midst mm-hmm. of an anti-Semitic riot. That was a little disturbing.
Well, do you think they also use it as a selling point in other countries?
It's possible.
Because he's so popular, and you know, you can definitely get eyes on whatever causes you're fighting for, if you have, you know, an elected president flag, that gives you the mileage and the TRP, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's possible. I don't know what the world would see in him, particularly he despises so much of the world mm-hmm. outside of our borders.
Well, I feel like, right, like, because I'm an outsider, so my opinions totally sum up to zero.
Mm. Not at all.
If you look at the world as one, right, which is the direction that we are going to, right?
That's right.
In some ways, everybody thought that Biden would be more forgiving with other countries, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But he is probably one of the, I would say, the most aggressive presidents in terms of threatening everybody else. And you know, threatening everybody with sanctions and everything.
Mm.
And ironically, Trump was the guy who kind of worked with more countries.
That was how you experienced it?
Yeah, because, you know, I still remember it was like 20 days when Biden came into power, right?
Mm.
They sanctioned to threaten India, Brazil, Indonesia, like a lot of countries. because everybody was buying Russian oil, right? But India is not the biggest buyer of Russian oil. The biggest purchaser or buyer of Russian oil is Europe.
That's right.
So, you know, we buy our 2% of our oil reserves from Russia. And they did not talk to us. It was not diplomatic. It was very rough. They were like, you know, we are going to sanction you. And thankfully, our government was, now it's like very cocky enough where they said, okay, go ahead, not a problem. And, you know, they had to back off. And since then, right, I don't know whether you're aware of BRICS or not. BRICS is like a, BRICS is like a 10-12 country summit, like just like NATO, right? But the target is to get out of the dollar system, right? Like where dollar is your base currency. And that happened due to this Biden's whole, I would say, the drama, right? With just threatening people because the world doesn't work like that, because it's not like 1980s anymore.
Right.
But, you know, back in when Trump was there, right, it was better. It was better in terms of international relations. I really don't know about domestic because I'm not a domestic person, but I feel like that's why a lot of, you know, foreigners like Trump, because it kind of affects them too, right?
How do you feel about Trump's current rhetoric around imposing tariffs?
Well, it's interesting, but I don't know how your democracy works. Like, I don't think it would be that easy to, you know, pass it.
Well, right? You know, it's true. It may be, it depends. They'll have a very narrow lead in the House. It's still up for grabs in the House, technically. But they're projecting that the Republicans will ultimately triumph and have a very narrow majority. And then, of course, those offices, many of those will be up again in 2 years. You know, you elect them every 2 years. The Senate, they have their majority.
But, you know, the next administration can just change it as soon as they come in.
It's true. But one of the things that Trump did run on was imposing tariffs on foreign goods. And so we'll see how that plays out.
I like that, to be honest. Because let me tell you, right, back in 2014, India was so similar to US in terms of dependency of products, China and other countries. And then we took a call and saying, because China is our literal enemy, right? Like they're literally next to us. So they were grabbing our lands. So, you know, India made a conscious decision of making India. It's a movement where, you know, India is trying to come up with all the products that we require in day-to-day life. And now the result is we have our own private space, like just like SpaceX, right? A space company. Now we have started to export a lot of stuff that was imported before, you know, in just 10 years. So I feel like, going local, right, in terms of manufacturing, even by forcing tariffs, you know, in India, it's the same, right? If you buy, a Chinese goods, it's going to cost you so much more. Like, it's like the taxation is like 300%, I think.
India imposes pretty strict tariffs on you.
Yeah. So that way, you know, you are forced to buy either, you know, other countries' goods or Indian goods. That has worked because, you know, India is a very cost-conscious market. So, you know, and I hope US is too. And now when they see that there's so much tariff, right? Just use local, you know, just use your own businesses.
That's the gambit, is that, that imposing tariffs will do that. But then remember that this country, our country, the United States here, has lost a lot of its manufacturing base. And that's not just because of a failure to impose tariffs. That's also because of things like North American Free Trade Agreement, where a lot of that got exported out to our neighbors, Mexico, with its giant factories now, and the rest of Central America and Latin America. So I don't know that that's ever coming back. for a long time, the left in this country has really considered how America can develop new industries. Instead of sort of pining for older manufacturing, can we get into newer industries like solar, tech, you know, things like that, wind?
But I still don't think so.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the Biden administration has helped bring back some manufacturing. This didn't happen actually during the first Trump administration. Trump promised it, but we continued losing manufacturing. He also had an opportunity to kind of tweak NAFTA, and whatever tweaks they made to NAFTA were not helpful. It is, however, that group of people in this country who are the angriest and and more than likely to be Trump voters, even if Trump policies have not actually helped them. Trump campaigning has spoken to their grievances and their culture of grievance, but Trump policies aren't doing much. You know, the tax cuts for the wealthy, et cetera, they're not doing much. I don't know if the tariffs will do it either. There's a there's a fear in this country that all the tariffs will do in the short run is just drive up the prices of all goods at a time when we when wages haven't come up yet to meet the rate of inflation.
But let me ask you this, right? It's a two-part question. One, that America has never tried this kind of tariff system, right?
They've tried it off and on at periods.
I mean, in in recent times, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
You guys have not tried it. And now that you're trying to build the whole, you know, the auto, you know, the car industry back and everything else, right? In Detroit and, you know, in all the industrial hub cities. Now, you know, there needs to be a stricter action, right, to help local businesses, definitely, right, by law. And the second question is, you mentioned, you know, how Trump appealed to those people, right, who were at a loss. Do you think it's like the whole Kamala machine just didn't work because it just didn't connect with people because she has been off the ground for 4 years? Like, she has lost the
That's a very good question. And I think there's a couple of things. Is that when we take a look back at losing all seven of the swing states, the fact is that if she had won the blue wall states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, she probably would have been on her way to a narrow electoral college victory and a popular vote loss. She lost those states by 2%. So we have this narrative right now, you know, a couple of weeks after the election, she got slaughtered, this and that. Actually, that's not really the truth. The truth is that she lost by 2% in states that she needed to win in order to win the Electoral College. And yet at the same time, she was running as a representative of an administration that had high unfavorables because of inflation, that where wages had not yet come up to meet the rate of inflation. Rate of inflation has declined dramatically in this country, but wages have not yet met it. So people still are feeling inflation. Prices don't come down. You know, wages have to come up to meet them. The only thing that's happened is the rate of inflation has slowed down. People don't really understand that in this country. And then the other piece is that she's a Black and South Asian woman. And so, and would not only be the first woman that we elect in a country that's frankly extremely patriarchal, but would also be a Black and South Asian mixed race woman doing that. And still, and also had to run a 100-day campaign. So even facing those headwinds, which would stop anyone's campaign, she still came within 2 percentage points in blue wall states of getting an electoral college victory. So at the end of the day, while it looks initially like a wipeout, when you really kind of drill down, given the headwinds that she was facing, she may have done a little bit better than we think, or certainly not as badly as was first considered in the immediate aftermath of the election.
Well, let me ask you this, right? In Trump's era, there was COVID, right?
Like, yes. Which, you know, literally the world was mishandled. Right.
Yeah. But your country survived out of it. Right.
Yeah, we survived.
And now when we are looking at the Biden administration and we say, you know, like they had a tough time. Right. And if you really look at it and you ask the question of what was the, you know, the primary thing that you suffered with? Was there a big thing? Like, was there one big event that affected people?
Well, okay. Right?
For the administration, then the answer is, you know, Biden administration successfully changed the terms of economic depression.
Yes.
Just to keep the brand administration going on, right? Do you think that at this point of time, both parties are pretty much the same? You know, they just sell what they want to sell and they do something else.
Yes and no. Okay, there are differences between the two parties. There are differences in policy between the two parties. But I would say that there is an American machinery, and there are some things that don't change in the American machinery. Mm-hmm. We are an imperialist nation.
Mm-hmm.
We remain so.
Mm-hmm.
That policy doesn't change, for the most part, from administration to administration.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Democrats may give you some, you know, for example, Harris will give you some acknowledgement of mm-hmm. what's happening to Palestinians, Palestinian mm-hmm. children, in fact, who are not responsible for any mm-hmm. attacks on Israelis. You won't get any of that discussion with the Trump administration. Okay.
Well,
that's a difference in tone. It's not really a difference in policy.
But Nicholas, does it really matter?
Like, it doesn't. The tone, and that's why I say tone uh-huh. as uh-huh. opposed to policy. Another area here is that you'll get consistent tax cuts for income mm-hmm. earners above $400,000 under a Republican mm-hmm. administration, and mm-hmm. nothing or very little for people below $400,000 in a non-Republican administration. Those are some differences that have meant a lot in this country since the Reagan era, which, mm-hmm. you know, I lived through this. I was a teenager during the Reagan era and then in college. And I watched the evisceration of the middle class in this country at the behest of those kinds of tax policies, the supply side tax policies. So there are some differences in policy like that. And there's differences in tone. But there is a machinery to America that continues apace, no matter who's running the country. Arms are still going to, you know, parts of the world that we're supposed to be defending.
Mm-hmm.
I singled out Israel, but that perhaps is not fair.
Let me ask you this,
there's a lot of parts of the world to which our arms are still going,
yeah.
no matter whether it's a Democrat or a Republican in office.
Do you think it's time for U.S. to say, you know, let's not worry about the world, let's start fixing our shit first?
Sure, I think there are a lot of Americans who feel this way. But this country is always, this is not a new thing, this country has always vacillated between isolationism and being the world's policeman. And we go back and forth and back and forth. And this is where
it's just convenient, right?
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of this is sort of the political winds of the time. We've had to be convinced to go to war, whether that's, you know, the sinking of the Maine or the bombing of Pearl Harbor. We've had this, our population has been isolationist at moments and wanting to just be invested in our people, our citizens, our politics, our economics, and our uplift.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's we're still an empire, right?
Mm-hmm.
We started to aspire to be an empire in the late 1800s, and then emerged as the dominant empire in the world in the wake of World War II. Whether America is still that empire that it was in the wake of World War II today is an arguable point. I don't think that it is either.
Yeah, I mean,
I think I would agree with you on that.
Yeah, in today's world, U.S. is more of a clown circus than actual power.
Yeah,
right. Because you know, like, American healthcare is famously fucked.
Yes, it is.
Right.
And lot of cities who have rapid homelessness spend billions not solving the problem, right?
Yes, that's correct. So
that kind of exposes the underbelly of the US society, where you're like, okay, then what's really going on, right? And I don't think anybody is asking these questions. They're just more concerned about which party do I vote.
Yeah, these are good. This is a good area to pursue in this in your podcast here. So so I've written. I'm an academic. I'm a professor. But in order to appeal to sort of a wider audience, I've written a detective novel set here in Oakland. And one of the things I'm trying to do in that novel is I'm trying to talk about some of the issues that you just mentioned. I have my first novel's come out, People's Detective. And it's about sex trafficking here in the streets of Oakland. This is a form of slavery, okay? A problem that we see globally, and we definitely have it here. We have it here in the space where I live. It's one of the third hotspots. The second book, which I am writing right now, is about homelessness in the streets around me here in Northern California. These are problems that a lot of the world deals with. And here we are, the great empire, and we deal with them as much as any other part of the world deals with these issues too. Yeah. For example, a couple of years ago, well, really in 2023, okay, there were over 36 million reports in this country of just child sexual exploitation alone, with the region that I live in. Oakland, Alameda County, San Francisco Bay Area, this region being the third highest hotspot in the country. That has a lot to do with the fact that we have a large Pacific port to which a lot of goods flow. We were just talking about tariffs and the flow of goods. Well, human trafficking flows through those ports too, illegally, and through through the country across the highways. And look, there's an estimated there's anywhere from 100,000 to about 300,000 people who are victims of this every single year in the United States alone.
Yeah. Yeah. I also read a report that said there are more people in, more people affected from human trafficking in today, in today's world, than
That's
ever
right.
in the history of the
That's
know,
right.
earth.
That's right. It's a continuation of something that we think globally
doesn't
that
exist.
We've gotten rid of. Yeah, we think it doesn't exist, but it's a continuation of something that is basically, Ganesh, it is slavery. And this is kind of the way that I wanted to deal with it fictionally. And there were reasons why I decided to do this through fiction as opposed to through an academic book. And some of that, well, everything about that had to do with access and cost. I write a piece of fiction and frankly, I can sell that for less, right? More people can get access to it, right? My academic books, you're going to spend $30 for them. A piece of fiction, you're going to spend less than half. And then a third of that if you're just using an ebook. And then you can get it used at some point in time. So I can get a wider readership and get people concerned. And the other thing I wanted to do was I wanted to plug the narrative. I wanted to plug with the narrative. I wanted to plug organizations that are fighting this. So the end of my novel has a glossary an appendix of organizations that are fighting sex trafficking here in this region and throughout the United States.
Yeah. Do you think there needs to be more harsh and stricter law around this issue?
Yes, I do. And much more enforcement attention to it. Listen, all the global problems that we began your podcast discussing, particularly the larger global economic problems, where the rubber meets the road on any of our streets is in problems like this, around people being trafficked. This doesn't exist if there isn't money to be made. And slavery is something that has always made money. And it has always been the gift that keeps on giving. One slave who can be used over and over and over again in perpetuity.
Yep.
And then killed, frankly, when the police are hot on your trail.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're facing, you know, I think this is part of a global, the broader global economic crises that mm-hmm. we've seen, and the concentrations of wealth that we've seen in this world, in the United yeah. States and abroad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's also kind of worrying when governments don't give a shit about it, right?
That's right.
They're like, yeah, you know, this problem exists. We could do something, but, you know, we're just not going to do anything, right?
Yes. And I think, you know, the interesting question about that is, so, you know, okay, in writing a piece of fiction, I have to speculate. Okay, there's a lot mm-hmm. that's speculative. And one yeah. of the things, I'm not going to give away the plot because I'd love for your listeners to read this, mm-hmm. but look, in speculating about this, there's this fundamental question of why does this continue?
Mm-hmm.
For example, you know, another phenomenon that's parallel to this that continues is femicide in places mm-hmm. like Mexico to our southern border. Mm-hmm. It just continues. You're in, you're yeah. out, you never catch mm-hmm. anyone. So I try to answer this question in the novel. And my answer in short for this mm-hmm. is it continues because powerful people are protecting it. Yep. So if you want to know why it's not stopping,
mm-hmm.
it's because there are people who are profiting from this, who yeah. are powerful. Now they're not on
exactly.
they're not on the street doing this, but they're yes. somewhere up the chain, right? We're not just talking
they
about
get their cut.
That's correct. They get their cut. These are mm-hmm. not petty criminals on the streets.
Yes.
But mm-hmm. somewhere, and the petty criminals may not even know to whom they're ultimately connected. But it's kind of like the drug trade. And this is yeah. sort of, this is the only trade, sex mm-hmm. trafficking, that is second to the drug trade. It's just right behind yeah. the drug trade, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And we know how profitable yeah. that has been globally. Mm-hmm. Well, we know that there are very powerful people up the chain who yeah. are running for offices, you mm-hmm. know what I mean, who are in government.
Yeah.
Who are aware that this is going on, who are taking mm-hmm. their taste and then yeah. some, and who will never mm-hmm. be arrested.
Yeah.
And so that's why.
And even if they're convicted and arrested, they just disappear.
That's correct. Yeah.
Right?
And this is why, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. so this is what I speculate on in the book. And I speculate mm-hmm. on this too. The way that I deal with this is that there's a little bit of Oakland history that I get into as well. Mm-hmm. In kind of exploring the depths of who might be behind this. But I do portray a city government, policing structure, a structure of authorities that are in on the game.
Mm-hmm.
Their hands are, and that has been reported out here. We've had recently Oakland mm-hmm. police who have been tried for mm-hmm. sexually exploiting and trafficking mm-hmm. An underage prostitute. These mm-hmm. are our police that have been involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think that just officers on the street are doing this without mm-hmm. anybody knowing. In
yeah.
fact, Ganesh, you know, one last thing I'll say about this is that I was at a book fair last mm-hmm. year, and this was sort of I was getting people to sort of look through the first draft of the novel. And there was mm-hmm. a San Francisco, I was in San Francisco for this. And there was a San Francisco police officer, retired police officer, who came by my table. And I said, I said to myself, he's going to hate this, okay? Because, you know, mm-hmm. I give the Oakland police a pretty rough time for their history mm-hmm. of corruption. I mean, it's all out there. We know that they're corrupt and they've been corrupt. He stops by the table and instead I tell him about the narrative and he says, listen, I used to work Vice in San Francisco. And he says, I'll tell mm-hmm. you that what you're writing about here is happening. And he said, even mm-hmm. when I worked Vice, he said he found a motorcycle cop who mm-hmm. was trafficking women
mm-hmm.
and then dumping their bodies off on the side of the road. You know, use and abuse people. And when he came to punish them, he'd drive them on out and dump them off on some road, you know, mm-hmm. Headed somewhere in Northern California, right? And he said what he didn't report the guy because, of course, they have their code of blue and they're not going to report one another. But he said mm-hmm. what he did was he beat him up, put him in the trunk of his car, and drove him yeah. out somewhere and dumped him off mm-hmm. the side of the road. Now, structurally, that did nothing.
Yep.
But what he was letting me know was, I was on to what's really happening here, that everybody's involved.
Yeah. Here's a funny thing about fictional book about real problems.
Yeah.
Whenever I talk to somebody who has written fiction about a real problem, they say that, you know, I imagined the worst and wrote this book. I wrote this book like 2 years ago, and I thought this would happen in 10 years. Like, that's this right. bad thing would happen in 10 years, yeah. but it's already happening.
Yeah. Yeah, that happened to me, Ganesh. I wrote this, I got it published, and then the news came out about Sean Puffy Combs, a rapper out here who you guys are probably familiar with as well. You probably have heard a fair amount of the music that he's produced. And turns out that...
You know what, to be honest, I have never heard his music.
Yeah, you're not missing anything. You're not missing anything. You know, you're good. Yeah, don't worry about it, okay? Don't let it keep you up at night, okay?
Yeah. I'll try.
Yeah.
Yeah. But do you think he's also going to, like, disappear, like Epstein?
Yeah, I think either that or he'll just never talk about people above him who knew that this was going on. But if...
Yeah, of course. That's a certainty, right? Like, he won't speak about that. But
he can't.
Do you think... Yeah, it's too expensive.
It is too expensive. And you listen... But your logical mind tells you there's no way that he's throwing these parties on the regular and the Los Angeles Police Department doesn't know that he's
doesn't
throwing
know about
these
it.
Parties. There's logically that makes absolutely no sense. Okay? Everybody knows that this is happening. And if you've ever been to LA and been around people who are in those circles, you know exactly what I mean. Everybody knows what's going on. It's a
But also it's community. Like this, right? If it was in like the middle of nowhere where he owned like 1,000 acres and, you know.
Sure.
You know, yeah, of course, nobody would know about it. But he is in a city. Right.
Right. In the middle of it. And there's all kinds of people showing up from all kinds of different industries, you know.
And if you know, like United States can find out a terrorist sitting in his bunker, I'm pretty sure, you know, you can find out a 100 people party in a city.
I mean, yeah, you can. Yeah, and your analogy is perfect. If you can find some guy in a bunker somewhere in the middle of nowhere, you definitely know what's going on with Sean Combs. Come on, you know.
In your own city.
In your own city, you know. You know, but you know, listen, and it's been going on for years.
Yeah.
Okay, there's no way that people don't know about this.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this happens quite a bit. The same thing can be said of any powerful person who you later find out has been to these parties, you know, the Epstein parties, the island. Look, Donald Trump was at these events. There's pictures of him at these events. We've never bothered to ask him, what did he do at these events?
Yeah. I mean, Epstein is like he's a non-partisanal person. He likes
He's
everybody
not.
Of all parties, right?
Absolutely. Because the thing with doing that is that you get an opportunity to compromise everybody. And I could make the argument to you that the reason why we don't know what Trump did at these parties is because nobody wants you to know what Clinton did at these parties.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's maybe some Democrats at this thing and high-placed Democrats and some high-placed Republicans at this thing. And so we have the gentleman's agreement.
Because
we're not going to talk about this.
Yeah, because politics is a business.
Correct.
It's literally like wrestling. You need a heel and a face.
You do. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you know, one cannot survive without the other.
Yeah, and I think that it's really like a business if you consider that everybody who enters into politics comes out of
politics you guys have the term
with
of,
money when they're done.
Yeah, and you guys have the term of calling someone a career politician.
Yes, we do. Yeah.
How the heck that's a term I do not understand, because it's like this, right? Like, you know, I do social service, and that's my profession. Like, profession is something that you earn from, right? And social work is something that you do out of your responsibility for the society.
That's right. That's right. No,
right?
If you read the so along with our Constitution,
yeah,
there were notes and documents that were written companion piece to that, and some of the discussions that people had around that were this notion that everybody would get to serve. Now, keep in mind, this is still a time in America when they're putting together the government where they only consider that white males are going to be participating in the government and voting, and specifically white property-owning males in the very, very beginning. Okay, yeah. Now, but there was this notion of what you call public service. You're going to go in, and then in Washington demonstrate this. You go in, you serve your two terms, you're out. You don't do the career thing. Right now, we've got folks who are saying, you know what? I'm 80. Let's keep the thing going. Okay, let's run Biden. For another term. Yeah, Biden and now Trump is about to be the oldest inaugurated president in American history. It's 78 years of age, and he'll die at 82, 83. So he'll be the oldest, absolute oldest. Mm-hmm. There's no point.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is that young people are electing old-ass men to... Yeah.
Because they don't have their options, though, Nicholas. They don't have their options.
You know, there are options. There's, I think, a lack of creativity around those options, but there are options. Younger people can run. We have had younger people running before. I mean,
but they withdrew.
This is a country that produced, John Kennedy. We can do this. No one. You don't have to be 78 to run for the office.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but a lot of candidates also withdraw.
And by the way, Kamala Harris was younger. I mean, she was in her late 50s, you know?
Yeah, to be honest, I really feel like Kamala really failed in her marketing area.
Well, she had 100 days, and he had been...
Yeah, but it doesn't matter.
Years.
It's like this,
It does
right?
actually matter.
Because it's like, you know, two people are writing exams, and, you know, you say, yeah, you failed because you did not prepare, you know, good enough. Like, you had 4 years, you were in power, you could have given... good subsidies at the end, at least to market better, but she did not.
Well, here's the thing. In America, vice presidents don't do much, and they don't get much glory. And the real fault here is with Biden, who initially said, I'm going to be a one-term president, I'm going to pass it on, and then he took that back. As if he had stuck to, I'm going to be a one-term president and pass it on, she would have been able to ramp things up for 4 years and actually... Mm-hmm. We didn't know until 100 days out before the election that he wasn't going to run because he ran. He
ran. Yeah, because he doesn't know what is the like day and the time, you know.
Well, you know, it's not, I don't think it's really that bad, to be honest with you, that he doesn't know the day and the time. But, you know, the thing about Biden that no one gives him any slack for, Biden has a speech impediment. Okay, this is a country, I'm just speaking about America,
but,
I don't know how
but, you
works
know,
in the rest of the world, but people are not tolerant of disability in this country.
Yeah.
So
but
he
the
has
same person has been, but the same person has been sexist and racist on tape.
Sure.
And still, you know, people like him and, you know, talk about him as if he's the next savior. And I hate that
you're
whenever
about
people,
Trump?
You know, sounds like it. But
I mean,
I'm talking about the both men.
Sexist and racist. Yeah, I mean...
No, I was talking about Biden.
I don't know where... I mean, Biden has said some things in the past.
He has said a lot of things.
But you know what
on
I think...
On Congress flow, on record, on tape, on campaigns, right?
I think that...
The reason I'm saying that is, right? Mm-hmm. For a common man or a woman... There is really not much choice.
Well, as long as we have a two-party system, a duopoly, you're right. There isn't much choice.
Yeah, even in India, we have like 100 political parties, but situation is still the same.
Yeah, I mean, if you have only two choices, there really isn't much of a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, one of the things that you learn, and I know that you've learned, India has learned this as well, is mm-hmm. that over time, there isn't much to distinguish one choice mm-hmm. from the other. There are some things to distinguish one choice from the other, but not mm-hmm. as much. The other piece is that it's not just that you only have two choices. It's mm-hmm. that you can't, it's very difficult to form new coalitions. Now, they do yeah. get kind of formed. You know, the mm-hmm. Obama coalition, for example, was not the Clinton coalition. Mm-hmm. The coalition that Harris was putting together was not mm-hmm. the Biden coalition. The Biden coalition was not technically the Obama coalition. They're slightly different voters. But it's mm-hmm. not as radical as you might see in a more parliamentary system yeah. where you're called upon to create, to be very much more creative in the coalitions mm-hmm. that you're going to build.
Yeah, but they're more interested in how much they can take home.
Yes, yes, yes. But what are we to do, Ganesh? You know, we can't remain cynics as we live in representative yeah. democracies, and we definitely don't want fascism. Mm-hmm. We don't, I know in this country, I don't want white Christian nationalist theocracy. You know, I'll just be honest with mm-hmm. you. I don't want to see that. I can't live here if that's mm-hmm. what the government becomes at some point in time. Because it automatically yeah. erases my existence mm-hmm. from the history of this country. And I've been here. My family's been here longer than any of these people who claim that, you know, I shouldn't be here. Mm-hmm.
I read a very interesting fact that said the most successful traders, like stock traders on the planet, is an American congressman or a woman.
Oh, sure. But
they're the most successful.
That's a question of opportunity and knowing when the opportunity is going to happen before it happens.
Yeah, it's blatant insider trading.
That's correct. That's why I use the word opportunity. It is absolutely yeah. blatant insider.
Do you want to know the percentage that they get in return of their investments?
No, I'm sure that it's quite high.
Yeah, it's 638%.
Yeah, that makes it over time. Yeah, that makes sense.
No, but that's no, how not over that's time.
How, that's how
on people, an average trade that, on an average
on trade, an average trade
a congressman makes 638%.
Yeah, I mean, but that's how you walk in without anything and then you yeah. walk out wealthy
with everything.
Yeah, I mean, right? I'm thinking about, for example, Congressman Paul Ryan, who had to I think he borrowed against his family's Social Security money or something like that in order to go to mm-hmm. school, and then he comes out of Congress. He's wealthy. I mean, he is absolutely yeah. stinking wealthy. And yes, it's a question of, listen, if I'm right now sitting down and I'm writing a law mm-hmm. about something, every law yeah. that I write is going to take a certain amount of time to take effect. But yeah. I can get in on the ground floor
yeah.
before it takes effect. Yeah, you're yeah. right.
That's a literal definition of insider trading, which is somehow legal. Right.
Yes, it's illegal / legal. If you can get away yeah. with it. Everything in America is built on this. I mean, this is why F. Scott Fitzgerald's novel, The Great Gatsby, is really the true American story. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever read that book, but it's the story of a bootlegger and his rise to mm-hmm. respectable society. There's, you know, somebody mm-hmm. who sold illegal liquor when liquor used to be illegal in America. Now, the truth of the matter is that a lot of American fortunes are built on crime. The Kennedy family fortune, for example, was built on crime. Mm-hmm. Most American fortunes are built on crime. If you go back to stealing land away from indigenous people, okay?
Yeah.
Or slavery, right? Mm-hmm. All of which constitute criminal acts. So yeah. American fortunes are built on that. The key is, as mm-hmm. you just said, can you get in on the ground floor? Because that's where the yeah. real money is being made.
Mm-hmm. So once when are you planning to be the congressman?
What's that?
When are you planning to be the next congressman?
I'm not planning on being next congressman. Although my colleague, I have a colleague, a co-worker who ran for Congress the session. She did not win, but she did pull down about 40% of the vote.
Yeah, if they won, they could certainly give us some tips.
You know, I'm just doing my thing. You know what I mean? Part of it for me is mm-hmm. just what's the best balanced life that I can live, right? Mm-hmm. I've got my little slice of what I need for myself and my family We did it the honest mm-hmm. way. You know, hey, it is what it yeah. is.
Yeah, but it's also right at this point of time. You know, like if you look at the whole situation, it is so easy to be a pessimist.
Absolutely. But you can't be.
Right. Yeah, you can't be because that's reality. You know, you cannot be pessimistic.
That's correct. You have it's to get like, up and you have to keep fighting.
Yeah, it's like being sad on your own, you know, happiest day. You created the sadness.
But you know, the thing is, Ganesh, you can do something. Everyone listening, you can do something in your community. It might be a small act. You know, we were talking, for example, about my book and sex trafficking. Okay, fine. If this is going on in your community, do something to help spread awareness about this. Okay? Mm-hmm. Get involved yeah. with a local community group that spreads yeah. awareness about, or some other issue in mm-hmm. in your community. There's going to be some small thing that you can do that yeah. brings some joy into somebody else's life in your community. And by doing that, you help yourself as well. You make your world mm-hmm. a better place. So there are still things we can do. The absolute worst thing you can do is to be so locked down in cynicism that it drives you to inaction. And that is precisely, I think, what the sort of craven political actors that we deal with all the time would like yeah. for us to do, to not only ignore what they're doing as they, you know, sit there eating like pigs from the trough, but also, mm-hmm. You know, to just be fall into a coma of inaction.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't do, so we refuse to do that. And listen, I did not, obviously you can tell from this talk, I did not vote for this nonsense for Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in my own small way, when there's pain created, as there was during the first administration, I'll do what mm-hmm. I can to resist that.
Yeah.
And that's what I have to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand that. Yeah, because if I was American, I'd be voting Trump.
I think if you were American, you might not be, actually. You might not be. Yeah. I think outside, you think that you might be, but...
But, Nicholas, there is a reason he won.
The reality of this on the ground is a little different.
Yeah, but the reality, he did win.
Yeah, so and...
Majority of people did like him.
Yeah, that's correct. But that doesn't mean...
Because he did... Uh-huh.
That doesn't mean that you have to. And the thing is, you brought up COVID earlier. Ganesh, it was an absolute shit show in this country around his mm-hmm. mismanagement of COVID and interpreting mm-hmm. COVID a pandemic as mm-hmm. An affront to his personality and to mm-hmm. deal with it politically. And then to talk to us about taking ivermectin or putting disinfectant in the body. Or a light in the body, things like that. Or asking people stupid questions like, can you fire a nuclear missile at a hurricane? And all kinds of nonsense. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's an absolute idiot. He's not going to manage well. He didn't manage well then. And he left. Everybody seems to have forgotten January 6th. The last that we saw of him in his last administration, he was leaving D.C. with 25,000 National Guard troops guarding our government buildings. It was an absolute shit show here. And I get it. You know, Americans care.
Do you think the other party got so desperate that they did that? Like, this is like an unfiltered question from my side. Because it almost feels like, do you think the other party was so desperate to get back in power that they had to do everything in their power to kind of, you know, take things in their favor? Because it is very clear from outset that Biden's administration is probably the worst one in recent times.
On what basis?
Well, on a simple fact or a theory that, you know, the Biden administration recategorized or literally redefined an economic depression. They said, no, no. You know, if inflation goes to a certain percent, it's not economic depression anymore.
I mean, technically, by any measure, by any measure, we weren't in an economic depression.
Well, you were.
We were at the end of the Trump administration.
Yeah, because that was COVID. But during Biden administration, you guys literally, not you guys, but, you know, the American government literally redefined economic depression.
What they did was they engaged.
So my question is, do you think how careless that is in terms of the worldview? It is so selfish to the core that I am going to redefine something just so that the federal bank, you know, the federals, but also world as one is going to suffer from this one small decision.
Yeah, I'm a little confused at the question. I mean, so we engaged in deficit spending, which actually began under the Trump administration when he started issuing checks to folks that he had to sign, by the way. He couldn't just let the treasurer sign them. When we started issuing COVID checks to folks, which was kind of like a little taste of a universal basic income during that administration. Yeah. So the deficit spending actually started under the Trump administration.
Yeah, but wouldn't you say that was like justified because of the stuff that we were going through?
Yeah, and for the same reason it was justified into the Biden administration, the early years of the Biden administration. The exigent conditions remained. I mean, we were still clawing our way out of COVID. So it didn't, those conditions didn't change the minute that Biden walked into the door.
Well, then if conditions didn't change, then why did this administration wanted to redefine the status or the indicators of depression? Let me tell you why I'm, you know, worried about that, right? Because every 2% that the Fed rate goes up, suicide rate also goes up by 5 to 6%. And it's US.
I've not seen that link to the suicide, between the suicide rate and the Fed rate.
Yeah, that's...
And also, the Fed has been lowering the rate, by the way, too. So
yeah.
Suicide rate.
They have lowered for the last three quarters. That's what they did. Before that, they were not cutting the rates. They were just increasing.
That's correct.
So my kind of whole approach to this is just be honest, right? Like if a country is going through something, you just say, yeah, we are going through a particular thing.
Yeah.
Right. Try not to redefine everything. So that it favors you.
It's the your definition of redefinition that I'm a little confused about.
Well, let me tell you this, right? okay. What do you in dollar value, right? How much do you think a person needs to earn if they're middle class?
It depends on where you live. Okay, if you live where
just an estimation. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, America is incredibly varied. If you live, So if you live where I live, which is one of the pricier areas in the country, you are talking about $125,000,
$150,000. Right. Now, let's say that.
But that doesn't apply if you live in, say, Montana. You don't need much. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm just using this as an example. If you said that $150,000, right, is what you need to earn to be a middle class family.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say we made that as a law. And if tomorrow, when the wages go down for some reason, I will redefine that and I will say, you know what? Now a middle class is 110K, 90K, 80K. Now I just redefined the law, right? And I just made at least 20% more people, you know, who were poor, the middle class.
Yeah, I'm
just by redefining the law.
Yeah, you're playing with numbers.
Exactly. Yeah. That's my point.
So I'm not sure where the Biden Fed rate did that.
Yeah, if the Fed rate just were shooting up and we were heading towards an economic depression, you call it as economic depression or heading towards economic depression. You just don't redefine the numbers and say, no, you know, everything is hunky-dory over here. You know, everything is awesome. Right, you guys keep going to the work, and you know, even though the world gets affected by it, I am very happy that my administration is safe from this.
So you're complaining about the Fed manipulating rates?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so you know that happens during any administration. The Fed is and the Fed is supposed to be working independently mm-hmm. of the political machinery, but it does happen during every administration that the Fed, uh-huh. because what the Fed is doing is the Fed is manipulating the economy. I mean, that is essentially the role of the Fed. Raising mm-hmm. those rates is about slowing down the rate of borrowing and attempting mm-hmm. to slow down the rate of inflation. So, mm-hmm. and they do that independently. And a president doesn't tell the Fed when to raise rates or not. At least mm-hmm. never, you know, it may have happened, but at least never mm-hmm. openly. You appoint somebody to run the Fed. That person does what they do based on their particular understanding of economics mm-hmm. in this country. It's explicitly not supposed to be a politically controlled thing, so that the president doesn't have the ability to come in and say, I need you to lower the rate down to, you know, another quarter of a point, basis point.
Mm-hmm.
That is not the way mm-hmm. it's supposed to work. And the rate.
Well, let me tell you this, right?
Mm-hmm.
In 2022, right, the first quarter of 2022, U.S. economy shrank by 1.6% and an economic depression hits at 1.4%. And Biden administration said, no, if economy is shrinking by 1.6%, that's just economic downturn, not depression.
Okay.
That's the exact numbers. And now by doing that, right, you effectively have messed with world economy.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Because you just downplayed a very severe problem.
That's correct.
Right?
Yeah.
Because if an economy is shrinking 1.6% every quarter, you know, there is not much quarters left, right? But I'm not saying Biden or, you know, one particular person, you know, in particular.
I mean, it is what we do. It is what the Fed does here. I mean, your critique is really of the Fed.
It's like this, right?
The operation of the Fed and its impact on the global economy. How your critique is really of the United States Fed. Federal mm-hmm. Reserve Chairman and the board and the Federal Reserve Board and their impact on global mm-hmm. economies. There's no question that
it, well, there was this whole discussion of Biden. Yeah, but you know, there was this whole discussion of Biden administration asking the Fed that could we redefine economic downturn instead of economic recession. Like, the fact is, at the end of the day, like, you know, they did lie to people, right? Because I don't know why, but I think they forgot that it affected real people worldwide.
Yeah, I don't think they forgot that. I mean, I think that you know, whatever they did was a gambit, knowing that mm-hmm. was going to happen. And that's the impact that a country like ours has on the rest of the world, unfortunately.
Yeah. So how about you folks be more responsible next time?
Yeah, you know, but you have got to come to America to understand why we're so damn irresponsible.
I'm happy.
I think once you spend some time out here, you'll find out why we're so damn irresponsible.
It is that way, you know, and like I can understand your point of view of just living there to see the experience, the American experience,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, totally, yeah.
Like getting billed millions for stubbing your toe.
Yeah.
I don't know. Right.
Now you're talking about our healthcare system and our healthcare costs. You're right about that.
Right. It is insane.
It is. But you know, it is, it's insane for particular reasons. Mm-hmm. And some of those reasons have to do with the role that we've
set ourselves.
Yes,
absolutely. I would say it's just greed. That's all it is.
Well, absolutely. I mean, do you need to have as much money as Elon Musk? You don't.
No.
No. I mean, that is the simple answer is you don't need that.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have one thing mm-hmm. that we don't have anymore in this country is we don't have philanthropists. We don't have philanthropy.
I mean, you do have them.
We don't have it like.
But it's.
Yeah, but
it's in the air quotes.
Yeah, exactly. It's in the air quotes. That's the best way to put
it. Right.
Yeah, do you mind if I quote that at some point in time? Because you're right about
it. Yeah.
Yeah,
please.
It's definitely in the air quotes. The other thing is about this country is that we've really, Ganesh, only had about 40 years in this country of anything that represents a real middle class. And that came in the wake of the New Deal, all the way up through the impact of Reagan's tax cuts. So you really get something between the 40s and the 80s, okay? Mm-hmm. Maybe late 80s. And then the middle class is really disappearing after that. This used to be a country where you had private sector and public sector unions. The minority of workers in this country now belong to a union and have somehow been deluded to think that the way that they can get their wages to increase is to argue for increased wages for themselves as individuals. That never works. Mm-hmm. It never works.
You're just fired.
You're just fired. That's all there is.
Yeah.
When you walk in.
Yeah.
You have to have a union.
That whole narrative is so dumb, right?
It's extremely dumb, but people have bought into it.
Yeah.
The other problem,
even in India, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Even in India.
And the other problem with our country too.
But Nicholas, do you also feel like governments absolutely hate unions? Because it brings people together.
Yeah.
You know, it creates a force that, you know.
Yeah, I do. And I think there was no better sign of that than when I was a kid. And the Reagan administration shut down the Air Traffic Controllers Union. Now, there were a lot of union workers who voted for Reagan. They believed in him. And they lost their unions during and as a result of his administration. Didn't stop them for continuing to vote for the same nonsense. But when he broke the air traffic controllers, that was a signal to every other union in this country. It's not going to go down like this anymore. You're not. And really, it was. One of the things that's consistent in this country is that union membership, when it was at its height in this country, was when middle class belonging was at its height. Those two things are consistent. And the drop-off of union membership has gone along with the drop-off in the middle class in this country. Mm-hmm. There are winners in this society, and there are losers in this society. And so you ask yourself, how is it that...
You mean to say there are politicians and then there are people?
Yeah, why not? Yeah, there are people... If you define politicians as people who get 600% on a trade, then I would say, winners.
Right?
Yes, right.
They're the absolute winners in any situation.
That's correct.
Right? No matter if it's benefiting people or if it's like putting people more down.
Right. That's correct.
Let me ask you this, Nicholas, because you're well-versed in academics and, of course, you know, you understand government so much better. Do you think that the whole frame of government, like how it's formed, is anti-human evolutionary? Because it doesn't let people unite, because every government is keen on dividing people. Because that's how they will, you know, survive, even if they do some bad shit. They don't want to, every government always looks to control people through money, property, and just freedom, right? Do you think this government frame is anti-evolutionary? Because we are not going to evolve from here. Because the government is just stopping us at this
moment. Yeah, I don't know if I would. I think I understand where you're coming from with the term anti-evolutionary.
Because look at what they did to the crypto. They said, crypto can be used to launder money and, you know, trade narcotics. Guess what? That's what even American dollar can be done too.
Yeah.
Right? Like.
Yeah.
But every government is afraid of crypto.
Yeah.
Every government is afraid of not getting information on people.
Yeah.
Like dirt on people.
Yeah.
And they're definitely afraid of people uniting.
Yeah, I think that the word that I would use, I'm not disagreeing with your word, by the way. I agree with what I think you're getting at. But I think the word that I would use is immoral. And I don't mean that in a religious sense. I mean that in a deeper spiritual sense. And what I'm talking about is respect for the human personality when I use the term moral, the respect for all human personality. And I do think that a lot of our governments do create laws that are immoral and that are about what you suggest, which is control. Mm-hmm. You know, what we've seen this recent struggle here over the reproductive rights of women in mm-hmm. our country. It's not that anybody wants children to be aborted. That's not what's happening here. What's happening mm-hmm. is, do women control their own bodies, and are they able to make decisions over their own bodies or not? Or do 80-year-old men in Congress get to make those decisions? Mm-hmm. And what is a more moral choice? Mm-hmm. Does anybody who loves anybody else, no matter their gender, get to mm-hmm. love and marry them openly without the fear mm-hmm. of violence or repression? What is the moral mm-hmm. choice? It doesn't have anything to do with anything else. So I think that mm-hmm. those are the terms that I would use. And I do think that where I pick you up on evolutionary is, I think globally, mm-hmm. as people, you and I, you know, sitting across all these, we're like 12 and a half hours apart from where we mm-hmm. are right now having this conversation. You and I could probably come to agreement on a lot of things a lot more easily. I think we have in this podcast.
Yeah.
People who lead us, only because I don't have any interest in repressing you, and you don't have any interest in repressing me. And because I mm-hmm. respect your human personality, and you respect mm-hmm. my human personality.
Yeah. And also, I think
we can do a lot.
Yeah. And also, I think it's like there is this universal recognition that you are human too.
You are human.
Not an asset.
That's correct. Not an asset. Not somebody right. Who's going to yield me 600% profit. Not somebody to be trafficked or anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're right about that.
Right.
And if I go into the world when I see you, when I mm-hmm. encounter you with that on my mind, that is mm-hmm. a higher evolutionary state, as you suggest. I think that is where we should be.
Mm-hmm. Because instead of fighting with each other, yes. I mean, that will never stop.
Yes, but I'm not interested in fighting with you. I may disagree with you, but I'm not interested in fighting with you. I'm not interested in jailing you. I'm not interested in repressing you. I am interested in breaking bread with you and mm-hmm. talking with you, as we have done here. That mm-hmm. is the human evolutionary and moral thing that I think that you're getting to.
Right. I mean, it's like this, right? There is this Indian proverb that says, conflict only when necessary.
I'm with that. I love that. That's beautiful.
And if governments ask themselves, like, is it necessary really to fight on this particular case? No, then let it go. Instead of getting into arms race and, you know, finding ways of destroying each other more efficiently.
Right. Which is what happens. You're right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And of course, there are a lot of people who argue that arms race is what led to a lot of, you know, industrial evolution. And let me tell you this, right? If you want to use this, when you talk to British English people, and when you talk about them colonizing India for 200 years, right?
Uh-huh.
They say that, you know, we gave railways to India.
Yes, I hear that. I've heard that before. And administration and all these other kinds of things. Because guess what?
Yeah.
India didn't have a civilization that had been there for thousands of years before the
thousands British, of years.
I mean,
we
forgot about that, right?
So the counter for that is, like, Australia, England, and Canada also got railways without getting fucked over for 200 years.
That's right. Right? I wonder how that happened.
I wonder how that happened. You know, in India's railway, it's very interesting. If you look at the British railway network, right,
mm-hmm.
it was designed to carry, you know, precious materials from inside the land to the ports. That was the railway system. And, you know, if let's say you were the contractor, right, of a railway network,
uh-huh.
you would get paid from Indian tax money, right, at Indian risk. So, for example, if somebody died, right, while building the tracks,
uh-huh.
you would get paid, not the employee. Wow. You would get paid.
Wow.
You would get paid five times. So it cost five times more to lay a mile of track as it would cost in Canada or Australia in the same time.
Wow.
So it's like, Yeah, you know, there are countries who achieved good railway networks without, you know, getting fucked for 200 years.
Yes.
And arms race is also same, right?
That's right.
You know, like, we can, you know, achieve those technological advancements without threatening to kill each other.
Right. Right.
Right.
Well, you know, think about two indigenous people here in this country,
yeah,
who had everything taken away from them because, you know, some of the founders of this country, you know, Jefferson wrote about this, mm-hmm, actually, would say things like, they don't know how to farm.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay.
Sure.
So
why not?
and here we are in 2024 with a lot, yeah, of our folks. My son, uh-huh, is a soil scientist, so I get a lot of this information. But we have a lot of, mm-hmm, people here now in 2024 going, you know what? Maybe the best way to farm, sustainably,
is not
to farm. It was the way that American, uh-huh, Indians did it, right?
Yeah,
because
exactly.
Guess what? They knew how to farm. They had been doing it for thousands of years.
Yes.
So, you know, it's the same sort of thing. I've heard that actually before from folks who I can only describe as imperialists and bigots. You know, that, mm-hmm, India received trains, its administrative system, its,
definitely,
from the British, because obviously,
yeah,
India didn't know what to do until the,
yeah,
British came along. Yeah, which is,
yes,
is utterly laughable.
Yeah.
But this is also something that we suffer from in this country. Would you have,
yes,
suffered from that colonial mindset?
Mm-hmm.
We also use terms like white supremacist thinking, which we,
yeah,
are burdened with in this country too.
Mm-hmm.
And this country is, one of the things we didn't talk about here is the fact that there's a lot of fear in this country,
mm-hmm,
right now that,
yeah,
is motivating our politics about the loss of a white majority in this country. Because that,
mm-hmm,
is approaching. It is right around the corner. And this country,
mm-hmm,
is much more diverse than people,
mm-hmm,
want to give it credit for being. We have,
yeah,
many more mixed race persons,
mm-hmm,
in this country and
than in any other place in the world, probably.
Yeah, that probably. Yeah. And, you know, this has also happened in Europe, too. And this is what,
yeah,
has prompted a lot of the fear and racial violence.
Well, let's not talk about Europe. That's a whole different thing.
You know, this is why you've seen the rise of extremism again in Europe.
Well, I think it's justified at this point of time.
Justified?
Because, yeah, because I come to a land, I say, you follow my law or I'll kill you. Yeah, you say, yeah, man. You know, like, fuck you.
Well, you know, it was always inevitable that if you,
mm-hmm,
if you colonize the world, let's say India,
mm-hmm,
for example, you colonize India and you extract wealth from India, all kinds of wealth,
mm-hmm,
right? And that, and you make England the center,
mm-hmm,
and essentially you make India the exploited periphery, right?
Yeah.
That at some point in time, just out of economic sense, people are going to say, well, let me go where the money is. So,
mm-hmm,
I'm in India. But,
uh-huh,
at some point in time, until we get our act together, which you have done,
mm-hmm,
by the way, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But at some point in time, until we get our act together, we're going to go,
mm-hmm,
to England and earn a dollar. Because that's where all,
yeah,
of our wealth from our country went, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I want a good,
yeah,
education, if I want to earn, et cetera, I'm going to go. And this is,
mm-hmm,
what people have done in the United States. So the United States has fomented war around the world and left countries in shambles.
Did you?
So it's, well, you know the answer to that. He's still doing it. And it's what imperialism is. And so it makes sense that people at some point are going to say, well, okay, this is where the wealth is. Let's go.
Yeah.
I can't earn.
No, I think they became liberal too quickly without understanding the consequences. They're like, everybody's welcome. Until,
yeah,
everybody was the majority.
Yeah, you know we have a very complicated history in this country of anti-immigration.
No, I was talking about
Europe. Yeah, perhaps.
Yeah, perhaps.
Yeah,
because they were like, everybody is welcome.
Perhaps.
And now everybody is a majority.
Right. But the thing was that this was going to be the consequence of England being able to say that the sun never sets the sun never sets on the British Empire. Okay, fine.
Because the God himself didn't trust British and dark.
Yeah. So right. So at some point in time, everybody's coming. Get ready.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are you gonna do?
Yeah. I like Poland's approach to it. Right. Mm-hmm. They're like, you can come here, live here, do whatever you want, but you don't get to tell us what we do because we are the original people of this, you know, land.
Yes, but Poland does not have a history vis-a-vis, say, India that England has of brutal murder, repression, colonialism.
Yes.
It does not have that history. And so Poland doesn't feel any guilt with respect to this.
Exactly.
This is kind of where, this is an interesting phenomenon, by the way, too, Ganesh. It's sort of where your racial and national identity positionality changes depending upon where you go. So as somebody from Bangalore in Poland, you have a different positionality than someone from Bangalore in London. It's a completely different thing. This also happens to me as an African-American. So while, say, England or France or Spain or Portugal did what they did in Africa, when I go someplace like, say, France, the French don't have any issues with me as an African-American because my racial positionality has changed. They don't have any sense of guilt with respect to me, right? And so, and my relationship to them changes. My relationship is not the same to every European or every European American, even necessarily.
Yeah.
Because that is just simply what happens when you travel and you move around the world.
Yeah. And, you know, when white people move, they're called expatriates.
Yes. And when we move,
migrant.
Migrant. Yeah. That's right. There you go.
That's the most nonsensical approach I've seen.
Ganesh, right. Do you know who the most successful migrants are right now to the United States?
Indians.
America? No, actually, you have been eclipsed by Nigerians. There's a brain drain.
Better scammers. Nigeria.
What's that?
Better scammers.
Better scammers. Well, but that presumes that we're calling anybody a scammer, and I would not.
Yeah, Indians are scammers.
Yeah, I would never hear that come out of my mouth. I don't have the ability to say that, and I would.
Exactly. You're not in the position to say that, but I can.
I'm going to leave that in your hands. I want nothing to do with it.
Yeah, and there are scum Indians, you know, like every place else.
Well, everybody's hustling, you know. I mean, we got scam America's American scam. You know, that's what we do. You don't want us migrating around the world. We're going to scam everything from you. Sell you.
We are going to expatriate.
I mean, listen, an American's going to come to Bangalore and sell you a national monument that you've had there for 3,000 years. That's what we do, okay? We're scammers, too.
Yes, but you're just a more classic scammer.
I don't know. I don't know about the classy part, dude. Yeah.
Meaning, you know, you get away with a lot more money than us.
So in this case, what you're talking about is just the difference between what we call white collar crime and blue collar crime. Okay. That's it.
Exactly.
That's it.
Yeah. It's like from petty theft to like scamming a bank.
You know what, Ganesh? I'm glad you brought this up, actually. I know we're joking, but although there's a little bit of truth in what we're joking about. But one of the things that came up for me in writing this novel was, if I had a character who wanted to deal with very powerful interests who were doing things like sex trafficking, right? The same thing is happening in my novel about homelessness. How would they go about doing it? A strictly violent approach doesn't work. Okay, you're outnumbered. And so I do have, so my book gets labeled by Amazon under heist crime because without giving the plot away, my character does say, okay, maybe I'll scam. So seriously, this happens in the novel because my thinking is,
good.
If you really want to get to somebody who's perpetrating a high crime like this, the most effective way to get to them is get to their money. That's how you can truly bring them to them.
Yeah.
So if you can pull that off.
You took the ISIS way. You know how we killed ISIS, right?
Yeah.
We just bombed their banks.
There you go. That's the way to do it.
That's where I think you draw the inspiration.
That's where I'm going. That's exactly where I'm going. Yeah.
Nice. And that's a very logical approach, right?
I think so.
Yeah, because
I was seeking a nonviolent approach, and it turned into, this makes a lot of sense, you know? And to do it within the context that I have in the novel of crypto, you know, so crypto is discussed in the book as well. As both a thing for economic freedom and a thing for laundering.
Let me ask you this. Did you take inspiration from how U.S. took yachts from the Russian billionaires?
Yes, I did.
As an example?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I did.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, because that phenomena has been happening out here. So we've had oligarchs buying property out here as a way to launder their money.
I think you guys are concentrating on the wrong kind of people.
In what sense?
You need to look at Chinese, Russian.
Oh, sure, they definitely are. They definitely are.
Look at Hollywood, right? For sure. Look at Hollywood right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, do you remember that movie, The Interview?
Yes, I do. It wasn't a good movie.
Do you think they could do that? Yeah, do you think they could do that today?
Yeah, I mean, minus all of the anal sex jokes, yeah, they pulled that off. That was such a horrible movie. It was like one long anal sex joke.
Yeah, but I think it was intended to be that way.
Yeah, I think so too. I also think the guys who made that movie were high while they were doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not possible today because the Chinese would say, no, you can't do that.
Probably.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't think that's a possibility today in terms of if you look at who owns Hollywood and you say, can we do that? And the owners of Hollywood say, no, definitely not.
Probably.
Right?
Yeah, they would probably
Because you're hurting sentiments of my business partner.
Yes, they would probably say that. Yeah. And they're not the only industry, by the way, where that something like that would be said.
Well, the chicken industry of U.S.
Yeah, I mean, consider that for many years in this country, we never talked about the Japanese genocide in Manchuria because the Japanese were trading partners. We still don't talk about it. There are things that we do turn a blind eye to with our trading partners.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
There are one too many instances of that.
There unfortunately are. Yeah.
Right.
But that's what happens when you have a world of butchers.
Yeah. I mean, you guys went to war with a country for destroying two buildings. So
yes, that's right. We did. Yeah. And we went to war with the wrong country for destroying two buildings.
Guess what? Because you guys can't spell the country's names.
You know, that actually is a real problem in this country, particularly when American citizens are misinformed. At the time that happened, so I grew up in San Francisco. I live in Oakland now, but I grew up in San Francisco. And I grew up in a neighborhood that had at the time, a lot of Iranian American businesses.
Thank you for not saying Middle Eastern people.
All right. And what happened was that Americans, so people lash out, right? And one of the things that happened was there were Iranian American businesses that had their storefronts trashed and had to put up signs saying, we're Iranians, not Iraqis. Because Americans tend to go, okay, it was just, you know, it starts with an I, you know,
the
first three letters are IR, and it has an R and it has an A, you know what I mean?
That's
so,
all.
So let's go for that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're surprised. I'm surprised we didn't hit businesses owned by people from India because you've got an I in there as well. It starts with an I. Let's go for it.
Starts with an I. Yeah. People look the same.
It's close enough, right? Isn't it in the Middle East too? Yeah. I mean, we're very ignorant here about the map. But, you know, racial violence has always been predicated on
ignorance. You know what? If I was an Iranian, I would, you know, below that note, I would say, learn your geography, idiots.
Yeah. I would too. But then they'd probably smash your business for calling them an idiot. So, because that's the thing is that, you know, in America, we reserve the right to sort of exalt our ignorance. It's a, it's a badge of honor, you know, not to know. being stupid is kind of misinformed is kind of a badge of honor.
Yeah. Also, it's like it gets weirder as the time passes, because if you look at Instagram or, you know, any social media, it's essentially Americans making fun of Americans for not knowing geography or mathematics.
Right. Yeah. Well, the other, you know, way to handle that is to improve the school system, to actually put tax dollars into improving the school system.
Well, then people would be intelligent and they would start questioning the government system. Yeah, so we should not do that.
Yeah. You know, Eisenhower, President Eisenhower, former general in World War II, talked about that and, in fact, laid out what the, you know, he compared costs of bombs with costs of repairing schools. And so,
well, you don't do that.
Was the last American president to ever do that. Hasn't been done since.
See, I told you. Yeah. I told you. Because it's far more easier to export bombs than schools.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently.
And that's where we're heading.
Yeah, that is where we're heading.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Nicholas, for being here.
It's been
here.
Great talking to you.
Yeah, same
You're
here.
You're an amazing host. You really are.
Thank you so much, despite my cold. Thank you so much. despite my sucky voice, thank you for being here.
Oh, that's all right.
And if people wanted to, you know, buy your book, where could they? Or, you know, if they wanted to find you, where could they?
So they can find me at nicholasbaham.com. That's my website. The book, The People's Detective, A Sonny Trueheart Mystery, is available on Amazon. And if we want to put money back into the pockets of billionaires, we can shop through Amazon. But it's also available through Thrift Books, bookshop.org. You know, look, it's global shipping, so you can get it anywhere. Mm-hmm. Published by Bootstrap Publications. And again, you know, I'd welcome, I'm going to put this up when the interview is ready. I'm going to put it up on my website as my podcast, one of my podcast appearances. If people want to come by, drop by and see that, sign up for my, I have a Substack. People can sign up for after they get on my website. They can find that. And I'd love to get some international readership and critique. Find out if people learn a little something about America and places like Oakland, California, by reading the novel, The People's Detective, out on Bootstrap Publications.
And guys, all the links will be in the description. So just take a look at, and if you really think that you need to talk to Nicholas, yeah, you know, his website will be in the link and, you know, you can get in touch with him.
Yeah, my email's on there. Thank you.
Yeah. And he did a very bad job of selling himself.
Did I?
He's a very academically achieved, established person. Yeah, so just go to his website and you'll be blown away of what he has done in
my academic books are going to be on there too. So I have to list that page so you can see the full range of things that I've done, both the novel and things that are more academic. I appreciate that, Ganesh. Yeah. Thank you.
So yeah, he's undersold himself throughout the episode. So just go to his link and see.
Ganesh, because, are you telling me to be more like a congressperson?
I am telling you to be the congressperson, not like.
All right.
Right. So this is the end of the episode. And if we have somehow managed to offend you, you know, you're welcome.
Thank you.
And, you know, until next episode, take care and be peaceful.